Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Coombs. It is a glorious Sunday. Of course, we had our show yesterday, Crime in Wrestling. Thanks for the crazy downloads. It's great to get good downloads on a Saturday. It is very rare, and I'm working hard for you. I hope you enjoyed our triumvirate of stories about an officer that smoked a little weed and it affected a wrestler's career. But that's what we do every single day as we put out different shows every single day. You never know what you're going to get, but hopefully it's short. Hopefully it's going to give you your daily dose of wrestling content. Today we're going a little bit longer because I have a special guest to talk about race in wrestling. We're going to call this segment Shades of Gray. We're going to do it once in a while. And anytime there is one of these topics a lot of people don't like to talk about as far as race in wrestling, we're going to talk about it here on Shades of Gray. And of course, today we are talking about Kofi Kingston. Now, when Kofi lost the title, there was a lot of reaction from a lot of people. And one of the reactions was, hey, it was a great show. And another reaction came from a lot of people I noticed were tweeting, and there were people of color that were tweeting a little bit different and felt a little bit differently about it. And I wanted to understand that perspective a little bit more. So I brought on Rich Fan. Rich Fan might be the smartest guy I know, and he's a Pro Wrestling Torch contributor. I've met him a couple times, had great conversations. I was a guest on his show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan, and I invited Rich on to talk to him about Kofi and a variety of subjects having to do with our Shades of Gray topic today. It's a great interview. I learned a lot. I thought a lot, and I hope you will too, because these are important topics. And of course, it's one of the many things you can expect on our daily shows of Total Engagement right here on the MLW Radio Network, brought to you by your good friends at WrestleZone.com, the world's most widely read news wrestling site on the planet. And coming up right after this, Rich Fan of Pro Wrestling Torch. Joining us today is Rich Fan from ProWrestlingTorch.com and also host of The Deep Dive on ProWrestlingTorch.com. Well, Rich, now the reason I had you on, and I don't know if you listen to Total Engagement very much. I know you're a busy guy, but I did single you out as someone that I respected in wrestling journalism because you brought up to Tony Khan's face about representation, minority representation in AEW at the media scrum, where a lot of guys were asking a lot of softball questions. And then also, I heard you on the latest media call with Cody bringing up the very same subject. It seems like this is the minority representation with AEW and probably in all of wrestling is something near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, I think so. Especially as a black wrestling fan growing up, I saw, you know, I was a big fan of Bad News Brown, Bad News Allen. And so he was really, as I got older, the exception more so than the rule for a lot of the black wrestlers I saw on the TV screen, especially as presented by Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And the reason I ask those questions is really not necessarily because I'm worried AEW won't have the representation, but as people had mentioned on Twitter, you know, I just want it as a matter of record so that in a year from now, or as Tony mentioned during the first scrum, by the end of the year, if we don't see in the men's single scene, I try to be very specific with that too, because the women's scene and the tag team scene, I think, are pretty diverse and an array of wrestlers, races, creeds, sexual orientations, genders, etc. That's great. But when it comes to most North American wrestling, especially with Vince McMahon's lens the last 35 years or so, most people look at the male single scene as the de facto important scene, quote unquote. And so I just wanted to make sure that was known. Because even if it wasn't intentional, that's going to be something that people will see as bear watching.
I was lucky enough to have my friend Ron Funches on the show, and he brought up the point that something that he was excited about AEW as a black wrestling fan was that he could be a fan of wrestling that he could be proud of. Can you explain a little bit to a white guy or the white guys in the audience what the experience is different for a black wrestling fan, especially as you said, over the last 35 years? What is it that we're missing that you're catching so hard?
And I think this is something that's not just a wrestling thing. I had a friend, a good friend of mine with sports say the same thing. I just want to take my brain off. Why do I have to think about that? I think it's just a lot of the little pieces that throw out there where when you think, and the best example I can give later tonight, I'm doing for my show, I'm speaking with a woman, Jackie Pratt, who her PhD thesis for academia was on the intersection of Candice LeRae as it pertained to her being a women's pro wrestler, an intergender wrestler, a hardcore wrestler, and an independent intergender hardcore wrestler. And for me as a Black wrestling fan and as a Black wrestling person in, I guess, media now with the Torch, it was very striking to me because it was the same things I always saw where you see your character, whatever wrestling character you see is always, I'll use Vince as an example, but then I can kind of expand it out. When you look at a Vince McMahon product, most characters are one-dimensional and Black wrestlers are basically half-dimensional. And so there's never really any depth. You know, there's the long mentioned quote of Freebird, the Freebird himself saying, you know, too many gimmicks as it pertains to a Black wrestler with anything other than just his Blackness as an additional gimmick to his character. And so that gets old really quick. I think about, you had Ron Simmons, who in NWA slash WCW under a, you know, Cowboy Bill Watts, who the Torch was instrumental by way of, you know, Mr. Madden and the article that he did with Wade and getting him fired from TNT, mainly because he said, I don't believe Blacks and whites are equal. I don't think they should be drinking from the same fountains, et cetera, et cetera. But he still pushed the first major Black world champion on television in Ron Simmons. And then he comes to WWE and he's Farooq Asad and he's got Sonny, a blonde white woman, as his sidekick. And then even when he moves to the Nation, he's seen as like more ignorant than, say, Darius Lockhart, who's currently in the Indies, who goes by the idea of being a revolutionary. If you look at Darius and you have taken Darius's character and threw him into 1997, 1998 WWE, I think that would have been a far better discussion than having Ron Simmons kind of bloviate and then get devolved further later on when he's a member of the Acolytes or APA as just the dude who says, damn. So that's kind of where I'm looking at it. And so when you look at a lot of the white characters, you could have a Randy Orton. What is a Randy Orton when you think about him? When you deconstruct, what do you think, Matt, Randy Orton is?
Randy Orton is a third generation wrestler. He's a legend killer. He's got a pedigree, but he's also a viper. He's a cocky guy. There's a lot to his character over the years that we've learned about him.
Right. And then flip it and look at his opponent who had that 11-year gap between trying to get to the same spot as Randy and then finally getting there, if only for that brief moment, looking into the clouds and seeing the sun, Kofi Kingston. How would you describe him prior to that run?
Prior to that run, he was Jamaican, and then he was a high flyer. And then he was a church clapping guy, and then he threw pancakes.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I've seen for a lot of Black wrestlers. And then, you know, it's also the additional wildness of, there's a gentleman who wrote in Forbes about the match last night. And I always have my quibbles with the gentleman. I can't remember his name, but he always starts any of his theories from the idea of The Rock is not a Black wrestler. And I would point to Warren Sapp or any of the Miami folks. I'd point to his dad. I'd point to him and disagree vehemently. But the idea of The Rock had the same pedigree that Randy did. They posited him that same way, and they just ran with it. And the fact that they ran with it, I would argue, is why people didn't see The Rock, despite him being the son of the Soul Man, Rocky Johnson, as a quote-unquote Black wrestler, because they gave him God bless him, three dimensions. And so that was just, you just used what he had. Very rarely do I see in professional wrestling, at least through WWE's lens, a Black professional wrestler being posited as a wrestler just like everyone else. It always has to be a side thing. When you look at Ring of Honor, I look at Jonathan Gresham, and he, to me, is a person similar to Bryan Danielson at the same time when he was in Ring of Honor. I even joked with Sean Radican at the Torch, they should bring back the pure wrestling title just so Gresham could continue this generational thing he's doing right now. Whereas you wouldn't see someone like that, just a boots and trunks outstanding wrestler that has a verve and an attitude about him in WWE, because the closest I would say is, I can't even think now, Kofi post-title. that's going to be the big thing for me. How do they treat him? But given what happened last night, I am not really encouraged, to be quite honest.
We'll get into Kofi, but let me take it back. One more thing to what you said earlier about portrayal. Portrayal is important, right? Where is the cross-pollinization between portrayal and representation? You know, you talked about you want representation, but also in representation, you want that portrayal. Do you see those two intertwined?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with representation and portrayal is Cam Hawkins, who also works with me at The Torch, he did a ballad of Kofi Kingston prior to WrestleMania, and the idea of you never just had a cool, chill black dude as a gimmick, whereas you've had that many, many times with white wrestlers. I can just, off the top of my head, Rob Van Dam, Matthew Riddle, Shawn Michaels, pre and post Sherry as a heel. You know, that idea of someone who just doesn't necessarily care about their opponent because they feel like they're so either superior to them, or they feel like they're so oblivious to the danger that they're in the case of Rob Van Dam when Sabu was trying to kill him every chance he turned around during ECW. So not having that representative and only seeing the portrayals as, let's see, Crime Time, you know, looking at how the simple nature of someone like Aron Killings being portrayed, even though he is a phenomenal, multifaceted wrestler who you saw in Impact. And even in some regards now with this 24/7 title, you get to see a lot more of him. Us not seeing Mark Henry other than the smiling, jovial black man until he got a chance to wear that salmon suit and destroy us all as we thought he was retiring. And then he went out and killed John Cena and created the Hall of Pain. You know, those sorts of things are the things I'd like to see more of, and less of someone telling Mark Henry to say, call yourself the Silverback, because if he says it, that makes it less racist. You know, it's those little things in terms of portrayal. Or simplest portrayal right now, for those of you who aren't necessarily a wrestling fan of color, look at the portrayal of the Street Profits on NXT versus the Street Profits on Raw. I venture to guess that you would see those two men as serious championship contending tag teams in NXT, but then when they're on Raw, they're the equivalent of the Crows and Dumbo, just bloviating about whatever else is going on. And I'm glad they kind of moved away from the hypersexualization of having Montez and then Angelo basically lusting after every white woman that comes by before or after the scene they're in. So that stuff kind of gets weird. But, or shoot, look at what's going on with Lashley. Very first thing he does after he comes back from injury, we have two cuck angles going on right now, and he's basically the Mandingo character. And so seeing these things, it's like, okay, the big, strong black guy is grabbing the white woman. Like, I've seen this before. How come we can't have, before he got hurt and had the incidents going on, we haven't had, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, a black version of looking at Lars Sullivan. Someone who's like a hyper-intelligent, hyper-athletic wrestler who will beat you with brains and brawn. Like, and that's the entire gimmick. So in terms of portrayal, we get these kind of shadows of a portrayal. And so while they can tout the representation, they can tout the number of black wrestlers they employ in terms of actual usage. I would say if you look at the women's evolution, revolution, a Sasha Banks, a Bayley, a... whatever they're doing with her now with the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka, were great representations of how a Latino woman, a black woman, and an Asian woman can be positive without them being hypersexualized. But on the men's side, it still leaves a lot to be desired.
With Kofi, you talked about how he was a chill black guy. It seems to me an interesting line where you don't want the gimmick that he's black, because that's what I'm what you're saying, is that historically the gimmick is they're black. Like Coco Beware, his gimmick is he's black. As much as I loved, and I'm a little older than you, as much as I love this, Soul Patrol, which is Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson, I like them because they were charismatic, they were energetic, but basically looking back on it, their gimmick was that they were black. How do you go beyond that as a full-rounded character, but also still embrace and stay true to the African-American experience and representing, especially kids out there, African-American kids or kids of any color who want to see someone that looks like them and acts like them genuinely on TV?
I think it's just it starts with the easiest thing to me is taking a step back and thinking about who is this for? If you're doing it to try to bring in the most audience, because I don't think people are going to do this out of just the kindness of their hearts. My argument is, if you want to make the most money, get the most people in the room. And so when you look and you see, you know, I see, I'm going to use an example. Some of the people I mentioned during Cody's conference call, Trevor Aeon. Trevor Aeon essentially is a black goth wrestler who does a vampire gimmick. And we've seen that several times over with white wrestlers. And so seeing that shouldn't dispel your disbelief of the wrestler. It's just that we haven't necessarily seen a black wrestler do it. So I think having more of that in there, it isn't just like, because I feel like it becomes this otherness if you have all of these characters and then you have one person who's like, this is Bob. Bob is cool. We're not going to talk about the fact Bob's black, but he's there. It's there. I think you have to lean into it. I think you mentioned Soul Patrol. The first team I thought as a counter is Doom, where they were out there and they were like, the Road Warriors. It wasn't necessarily a black or white thing. It was a me kicking your butt thing. And I really appreciate that, because Butch Reed and Ron Simmons and, you know, Teddy Long, again, posit Teddy Long vis-a-vis his WCW days with Doom. And then you take him as holla, 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 we got a tag match player. And it's some of it's going to be fun, but some of it's also like, I've seen, can I see more? One thing I think that would be an easy fix, they've signed him already. Let Stokely Hathaway manage someone the way I saw Stokely Hathaway manage people in the independents. And that was like a traditional wrestling manager, but he just happened, instead of having a tennis racket or using traditional Southern wrestling manager tropes, he would still be put in those positions, but he might mention like a Jodeci album or just, you know, be himself and mention some random 90s R&B group, as he's doing currently on Twitter, where he's created a storyline where someone stole his CD player, which for some of your listeners, you know, you're younger than me, you're older than I am. And I'm sure for the folks that are younger than us, they might have to Google what a CD player is, but don't worry, it exists. It's not something that's fake.
And you mentioned having more people of color and, you know, as mouthpieces. And that way, if you have a Stokely Hathaway up there, he is coming across with credibility, he's coming across genuinely. But it doesn't really go to a major point, which is, if you've got, let me ask you this, because I got in disagreement with somebody about this. Yeah. If you have white dudes, me, someone who's watched wrestling my whole life, I think I can watch right wrestling, but I'm writing for the Street Profits, or I'm writing for the New Day, or I'm trying to appeal to a black audience through this black character. How important is it to have writers of color writing for these people that are expressing this to this audience?
I think it's important, but then I also think that it has to be a space where, because I think about, and you know, Bruce Mitchell, who we both know and appreciate, always talks about the idea of having people in the room. And I think from a comic book standpoint, some of my favorite characters in the last few years that my son has gotten into, Miles Morales, the black Latino Spider-Man, America Chavez, these were written by white men, and then at some point they handed them off to writers of color to continue the story. And most of them by Bendis, who was a key writer for a lot of comic books. But I think it has to be an ally in the room. So that's the first step. If you can't get someone of color in the room, get an ally in the room so that someone has the temerity to say, this sounds off. Can we go talk to Kofi and ask how he would like to say it? Can we get like some bullet points of, like, tell me what you want him to say. I'm going to go to him, and then we can kind of translate it. I think that's the first step. The second step absolutely would be having that, having a writer of color in there. But if they don't have power and it's just going to be writing for one person in the room, that's still going to be a moot point, because I think the biggest, most important, which is the third thing, you need to have management cognizant of the importance of it. And I think the biggest tell with that has been, in my opinion, seeing NXT versus WWE main roster with regard to the treatment of wrestlers of color. I think when you see the way Triple H's crew treated a Sasha Banks versus early Sasha Banks in the main roster, when I see how they're currently treating Mia Yim, the Street Profits, Keith Lee, Ricochet prior to getting up here. You know, right now, Ricochet, the one issue I will say to his detriment is he has to work on the promos, because the promos they are giving him about superheroes aren't necessarily something that works for him. But he at least had that cool factor. He had the argument with Velveteen Dream, who I'll get to in a second, you know, where they had the first promo and then Ricochet flips over the rope onto the ramp and steps to his face. And that athleticism was his promo that you can't necessarily do all the time. And I realize on a 52-week show, but when you have a Velveteen Dream, you can't have someone else write for him and just put him in a box, because much like Goldust, I think early Goldust pushed so many envelopes in so many good ways that when you get to the derivative version down the road, it kind of takes away the good stuff you had back in the past. Like, to me, the most fun thing about Goldust was either the first run or when he got back with Booker T, where he constantly was like, it's mind games, Book, it's mind games. And you're playing off of 10 years now of a gimmick. Whereas with Velveteen Dream, I don't think he'll get 5 years on the main roster if they don't give him agency in his character.
We talked briefly, I don't know if you remember, about Velveteen Dream. And it's something that, like I said, the white experience, the black experience are very different. And I know telling you that sounds like duh. But for white people, there's a lot of white people that don't understand that or don't believe that because it's threatening to them to say that. With Velveteen Dream, we talked about him briefly, and that was the first time I ever heard the term hypersexualization from you. And for me, I'm just like, wow, Patrick Clark is this guy on Tough Enough, and he was fantastic. My son and I were like, dude, this kid has got it. And then when he turned to Velveteen Dream, I'm like, I don't know about this. But then I'm like, wow, look at him sell it. What a great character, blah, blah, blah. But for you, it kind of raises some red flags. What is it to you that you see that I don't see or that I didn't see with in regards to Velveteen Dream?
I think that for me, it isn't necessarily right now they're in a good spot with him. I think they're trying to find that Prince like sweet spot, but where he is this amorphous just being that men and women gravitate to. And I love the couch. I love the couch gimmick where he comes out. I think you should have men and women because that's how you posited it first. Because if you remember his first few takeovers, he was being carried down to the ring a la Macho King and some of his other predecessors by like his Royal Guard or something of that nature. And I thought that was really sweet. But I think you have to be careful because, again, this is the different time. You know, when you think about back when Goldust was around, you had people using the F slur on Raw, Jerry Lawler, Razor Ramon and others. And that, you know, people in the crowd. And being encouraged to do so. Now you're going to have some of the people, again, back to representation, who might identify as pan, might identify as they see Velveteen as like, you know what, this kind of speaks to me. But then if you posit it as a joke, that gets dangerous. Just kind of like when you think of the Fashion Police on the main roster, when you hear them talk. And I was really interested to hear them on Edge and Christian show talk about the idea of, you know, all they said when we got up to the main roster is act like you're kind of gay and go. That's all they told them about their gimmick. And that's horrifying because if we're talking about.
It kind of is, isn't it?
Because we're talking about that from like, just from an orientation standpoint and someone kind of like. I always think of, again, I might be younger, but I have always been told I have an old soul. And I always think of like Three's Company and Jack Tripper and how ridiculous that would be in 2019's eyes. And that's basically what they told them to do. And then you flip it and you have someone like Velveteen. If you get up to the main roster and you have an overworked writer and all Vince says is this guy's weird, go with it. And that seems to be the beats he uses for all these people because, and I'm very grateful for podcasts like your own. And especially when they talk to other workers, like with Jericho and Edge and Christian, because I remember on Jericho's, he had on Sami Zayn. And when Sami went heel, Vince just said, keep doing what you're doing. You're annoying doing that. Just turn it up. And he's like, wait a minute. I was a face before. So you thought I was annoying this whole time? Like that sort of stuff is scary.
And it's not necessarily just directed towards the minorities or disenfranchised minorities such as, you know, women or people of color or LGBTQ. It reflects itself in the whole product, as you said, when it came to Sami Zayn. When we talk about Kofi, and let's get into it a little bit, because, you know, in talking to my friends about this, there is a segment of people, good people who aren't people that I would call racist in the least, but there is this thing about why is it always got to be about color? Why do they inject color into this? Why has it got to be about race? Why do we always have to find something negative about this? Why do we always have to pull out a racial card in this situation? If you could explain, as far as Kofi losing the title, what is it that to you is so obvious and to a lot of white people or people that don't see it are like, what the hell are they talking about?
Sure. So I would say, and this kind of ties into what we're, when you originally mentioned it, how it ties into sports for me, when someone says, why do you have to make everything about race? To me, it's like, how can you not? I look at a wrestling promotion that has in 80 years, 4 black world champions out of however many hundred. I look and I see a world champion that just lost his title in 9 seconds. And Lance Storm, who I respect, and he's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, said, if you had an issue with this but didn't have an issue with Goldberg, the problem's with you. I would strongly disagree with Lance, because when Goldberg beat Brock in 8 seconds, I knew, I could have bet my mortgage on it, that Brock's getting that title back from Goldberg. I do not know where Kofi Kingston's going to be in 3 months. Is he going to be fighting for the Intercontinental title? Is he going to be walking around? Because to me, as much as people look at, say, a Dolph Ziggler as a guy who kind of, sometimes he puts it all together, sometimes he doesn't. Dolph is a 2-time world champion, and Kofi just got his first reign 11 years in. That's again, the issue. That's why those things come up, because to me, as a black wrestling fan, when I look and I see, I saw that they made the meme a few weeks ago of 9 world champions, like, thank you for your service on SmackDown. And then Kofi was the only one that said, not you. And I took that for what it was, is if you're saying that he had a boring reign, I can look, and one of my favorite wrestlers in this modern era was John Cena. He had 16 reigns, and I can pick probably 6 or 7 of them that were pretty boring, but he had 6 or 7 of them. Kofi's had 1. Jinder Mahal's had 1. And so that gets to be very, like, who gets to have those titles? And then when you think about this, Matt, and I hope your friends and I hope your listeners understand this, when you look at the timing of it, you go to national television and Brock Lesnar is going to be your biggest star. I get that from a business standpoint. I also get that when I last saw Brock wrestle Kofi Kingston in Saudi Arabia, Kofi Kingston got more offense in that match than he did in this one. And Brock was the champion at the time.
So within that context, is it possible that, you know, Kofi has not exactly set the world on fire as a champion? I think he reached a lot of people in a lot of ways. I had D'Lo Brown on to talk about what it meant to him and why it was so important to him that Kofi became world champion. He said a lot of things that you said, which is Kofi's just a dude. You know, it wasn't his gimmick, and it was great to see. But judging Kofi in a colorless world, which of course we don't live in, he wasn't setting the world on fire. Everyone knew that Brock was going to get that title the minute that Fox started. A lot of people believe that. Mm-hmm. Where is the racial component in that if Kofi was just going to lose it because you wanted Brock to the top? Is it impossible to separate the racial component from Kofi losing in 10 seconds the way he did?
I think it ties into me in the nature with which they posited it the entire time he had the reign. And most of the time you can look at how a title is viewed by how the heel announcer views it. And in the case of Corey Graves, the entirety of his reign until last night, he said that Kofi Kingston lucked into the title and it was a fairy tale that had to end because it wasn't realistic. I knew, despite the fact that I figured Brock would win the title at Fox, because like you said, same thing, it makes sense. The second I heard Corey Graves say, this guy has done a great job and he's represented himself well and the company well, I was like, this man's dead. Because now it's you got your gold watch, now out the door you go. And so that's where I think the issue is. It is, you know, not everything is going to be 100% race, but I think the racial connotation of it is, we're going to see it live because we've already seen. And that's another part that I apologize for your viewers or listeners. To me, it's also an issue because now Kofi is going to get pushed to the side because we can't have multiple people of color in that limelight going after Brock. It's now going to be Kane, Brown, Pride, Velasquez that's going to be going after Brock. And so that makes the other issue that I have. It's like, you can't, we can have the, you know, on NXT, you have Undisputed Era, four white dudes, basically, no offense. I love all four of them for what they do as champions and have people chase them. But right now you're going to have a title scene where it's like, okay, Kofi fall back. It's Kane's turn because Kane's more popular. He's a more popular brown dude. You're going to handle that. Tyson Fury, who is awesome. And, you know, in any other world, this is kind of like when, that's actually a good example too. When they had Big Show go up against my brain.
Floyd Mayweather.
I'm sorry.
Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah. Yeah. Floyd Money Mayweather. When they had him go up against it, it was Money Mayweather didn't have to change. He was himself. It's not like they dumbed him down. So when it's a famous person that they know they can't put through a prism of one or half dimensional status, they kind of have to roll with it. Same thing with, you go back when I was a kid, LT. When LT and Bam Bam, to this day, that's still one of my favorite celebrity versus wrestler matches, because God bless LT for pushing himself through that and Bam Bam for keep carrying him. But I say all that to say, it's really going to be that next step. If we see Kofi still in the title picture and he's fighting and he's competing and maybe he gets a reign or two, but maybe he doesn't, that's fine. But if he gets relegated back to New Day tag team wrestling pancakes and that's it, we all kind of see what it is.
Like if he comes back on TV and he's okay with it.
Right.
With what you're saying is that it's impossible for you and a lot of other, and I'm sure a lot of other African-American wrestling fans to not read in to what happened with a racial tinge, because I saw it on Twitter. I saw the reaction. Let's say there wasn't a racial tinge to the decision-making process and it was more of a racial indifference to what the results would be. Would it behoove the WWE to be more sensitive for how they handled it and be aware that there might be fallout or perception about the way that this, very important to a lot of people, Kofi Kingston reign ended?
Absolutely. And I think two things. One, they have the commercial they made prior to jumping the Fox where we're all superheroes, where they showed we want to represent everyone that's watching. They showed the wrestlers of color. They showed the, you know, like Alexa Bliss, you know, so every person who is a possible fan has saw something that said, this resonates with me. With Kofi, I think about the fact that you have this opportunity to do it. And I hope the ignorance becomes a little bit more awareness, because I don't know if you were aware, but I'm sure they were, because they didn't play his music. They just had him come right to the ring. Randy Orton, two nights ago, was playing on a stream in Call of Duty and dropped the N-word. And
I did hear that. I did hear that.
Yeah. And what made it even more frustrating, Matt, was that I knew it was going to happen. I even tweeted about it. And then as soon as it came out, I was like, I knew someone was going to make it. Someone took that, because he said, boom, N-word, as he shot someone, and then realized he was streaming to like several thousand people and, you know, shut it down. Someone took that sound clip and added it to the short stature of the Kofi match. So as soon as he get hit with the F5, you hear boom, N-word, pin. And it's, I mean, if I'm not the type to throw things, but I'm like, come on, can I kick a rock or something? Like, this is infuriating. And so I think that would be the thing. I think you're right. If it was just indifference, they have to be a little bit more aware and savvy to it, especially given the fact that I believe they like money. So make more money. I think if they look at their coffers, while he might not have been the best champ on the plateau of let's look at how he did in ring or promotions or ratings, I would bet dollars to donuts when you look at those shirt sales, they were very happy.
My thinking on it is that they knew they wanted to get Brock the title the whole time. They ran low on time, obviously, when they get The Rock in there and they cut Austin, they cut Sting, they cut Taker, they cut Flair. They were short on time. And then they made the decision without any regards to how important Kofi was or how bad it would look. With all that taking place, let's say that happened. My other feeling that I had this morning after I thought about it a little bit is that, much like Ron Funches told me, there's now options. There's now other places you can go to watch wrestling, you know, on TV or support a company that people think is going somewhere. Do you think the WWE possibly said goodbye to a segment of their audience last night? Do you think there's people who were like, okay, well, now we have something else we can watch. I'm going to go ahead and switch to AEW.
I think they're going to be some folks. And then some of those very folks are also, I think, that's kind of where it all gets mixed together. When you asked at the beginning, it's like, how can this be about race? I think for a lot of folks, that's why they're so hypersensitive to AEW. They're looking at their men's scene and only the men's scene and saying, hey, wait a minute. You got Jake Hager. You just added Jake Hager, the only black dude on the roster. You got Sonny Kiss and you got Scorpio Sky. And to me, I'm like, Scorpio Sky is like one of the few graduates of the North American New Japan JoJo. He is crazy entertaining. He's an outstanding wrestler. And as you saw in that first AEW show, he's more than happy to be good on a mic with a live camera. There's no fear in his eyes. There's no trepidation. There's no bass out of his voice. So I would love to see him posited as a singles challenger champion. But when you only see, you know, the Bucks, Cody, but then you think Bucks, Cody, Kenny made the promotion. They were the top stars of the independent scene. Why wouldn't they be on? You have Moxley. Why wouldn't they be on television? Why wouldn't they be on the advertisements? So it's going to, that's what's leading to a lot of people getting super sensitive to it and also kind of pushing. And so I think they are going to lose some people, but I also think at this point, when you look at the age of the average WWE viewer, it's skewing closer to 50 than 30. There are people who have kind of accepted what they are and will watch, tune in, tune out. Like, we have a pay-per-view this Sunday with 3 matches. And in the old era, that would be a story I'd be waiting to read in the Observer and the Torch about how the buy rate did with that. Because in this new era, they can afford to kind of gamble like they did.
The only parallel to that is December to Dismember, you know, where they only had 2 or 3 matches announced for that fatal last WWE ECW pay-per-view. And it's funny you mentioned Scorpio, because I did a show maybe 2 weeks ago when I talked about what superstar people are not talking about that's going to be a huge star for AEW. It is Scorpio Sky. The guy is ridiculous all the way around. He's got a lot of experience, but he looks great. His wrestling gets better every time you see him. And very cynically, I told someone today, if I was AEW, I would have Scorpio get a huge singles win this week and send out that signal that, hey, we are not the WWE. But you think they probably, AEW, to kind of fit this whole, I see your buddy Seahawk there is great on Twitter, always pointing out about the AEW inclusiveness. You think they just need to hire some more people, basically?
I think they do, but I also, and that comes with my day, I mentioned that too on Twitter, my day job, and I'm happy, I mix both of them freely. I work at the University of Pittsburgh, and I work in the office. I'm the associate director in the Office of Cross-Cultural and Leadership Development. So this is what I do every day, trying to help people have these tough conversations on our floor and work through it. Because if you don't have conflict, you'll never have communication. And so for me, I see it as the first rule I have at Pitt is diversity doesn't just mean black. Because that, if that's all it means to you in your head, you already lost the game. And so when I look at their roster and I see they have the first Native American black trans athlete in the women's roster, when I look at the makeup of the women's and tag team rosters with the number of Latinx wrestlers, non-white wrestlers in it and of import, it's not just people thrown away. It's not like Kai and Tai when they had Choppy Choppy your PP. These are wrestlers who get respect. The craziest person is Nakazawa. And even he found a great use, not only with the Riho Nyla Rose match, but also using him as a translator for Japanese wrestlers. That's such a logical thing that we've never really had in North America with our non-English speaking wrestlers. Just easy translation, just like UFC would. And so I think those are great steps. I think, like I said, in the single scene, sure, they need more wrestlers of color. In any other promotion, Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. is singles champs. Look at AEW, AEIW, both of those gentlemen have kicked butt around the world as singles guys. But if they're just going to be tag guys, then yeah, you really do have a dearth of wrestlers of color in your single scene. And Scorpio would be a great start. Sonny Kiss being treated with respect would be a great start. If you want to add more, if you want to add a Darius Lockhart, if you want to add a Eric Cannon, if you want to add who's the other gentleman Bruce mentioned in CWF, there's a couple of guys. I look at MLW, Myron Reed, great wrestler. Great. He's not in the main event scene, but he's learning and he's picking it up. And every time I see him, like you just said about Scorpio, he's getting better every time. Selena De La Renta in MLW, she's going to be a mover and a shaker for years to come in terms of what she's doing behind the scene as well as her work in front of the camera. Just giving folks a chance to do what most white wrestlers do, I think goes a long way, but you have to actually have them in the room to give them the chance to do so.
Well, I could talk to you about this all day. It's been a great talk, and I'd love to have you back on to talk about these issues, as I believe they're going to pop up once in a while. Rich, what do you think?
Happy to do it. And I'm always, well, you know, we don't even always have to talk about race and wrestling. We can talk about, you know, my favorite tag, because Power, I will not let Bruce beat me down. Power and Glory did not get the love they deserved.
Oh, Power and Glory were great.
I will die on that hill. Well, he's like, great at what? That's his entire response. Great at what? They were great at being an awesome tag team.
You know, if they didn't wrestle in the Greensboro Coliseum, they don't count, Rich. You know that.
I hear that.
Well, thanks again, Rich Fan, PW Torch contributor. Go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you, how they can reach you, how they can listen to you.
Sure. If you want to find me on Twitter, it's at @Rich_Fan, F-A-N-N. Our show is at East Coast Cast, or you can, of course, find me whenever the PW Torch main Twitter retweets me.
Thanks, Rich. That was awesome. What a good talk. I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you guys enjoy stuff like this. It's a great listen on your Sunday before we get into another crazy week of wrestling. Once again, it is Total Engagement. You can subscribe and listen every single day. I'm here every single day, Monday through Sunday, usually taping the day of the show so you get up-to-the-minute stuff. Please tell all your friends about your new favorite podcast hosted by your favorite fellow fan, Matt Kuhn. It's Total Engagement. We'll see you tomorrow.